Let's start with 55, since we have one testifying out here for 371 that we intended to take up, talk and get that one through quick. That's House Bill 55. And we don't have Sam Kiko here, who was notified. Frank Ferguson's not here. Everybody's
here. Nothing else to do but come to this committee?
I give up. Oh, you're testifying for that, huh? Okay, all right.
Where the hell did Senator Ray go?
He'll be back in a minute, sir.
Oh, I didn't know he'd be leaving soon. You want to come on up, John, and identify yourself? Everybody will identify themselves when they come up to testify and get the recognition of the chair if you're not up front here. Since we got the time, I'll explain all of this. I've listened to this tape here a few times when two and three people were talking. When you can see them, you can understand it. But when you can't see them, it's worse than Donald Duck. Let's wait till he gets back. We'll start out with a quorum. I'd go ahead. We'll get a lick of Bill. Old Bill gets all the sugar. Ben, how about you taking that direct this year? The ABC board is vacant right now.
This is Senator Hackney, for the record, agreeing with the chairman of the committee.
Not.
Hey, Barry, you got any recommendations for that? Linda Brown's position?
That's all.
You got no more recommendations? Of course, he probably won't take any week in. He never does.
There's an ex-linebacker from the Green
Bay. Okay, the Senate Commerce Committee will come to order. We're convened, and John, would you identify yourself?
Mr. Chairman, I'm John Shively. I'm Vice President of Operations for the Nana Regional Corporation, and I live in Kaiserville. I'll just briefly tell you how this bill came about, because Nana was involved in getting it written. We, 2 years ago, got some exemptions from the Federal Securities Exchange Commission laws. At the time we did that, we agreed that if that federal legislation went through, we would make sure that that shareholders were protected under state law. And after working with our lawyers and the state lawyers, we came up with a version of what is now House Bill 55. We are in concurrence with it as it's written, with one major exception. On about the fourth line, there's a phrase in there that says at least 10 Alaska resident shareholders. The intent of this bill, as I understand it, would mean that everything that's ever mailed to a board of directors of any regional corporation, since all regional corporations have a board of at least 10, would have to be mailed to the state. And that was not the intent of the bill. The intent was, from our standpoint, that anything that went to all our shareholders was to be mailed to the state, and the state would have the opportunity to review it. And therefore, we're suggesting that the words at least 10 Alaska resident be deleted, and the word the be put in its place. I mean, the effect of that would mean that anything we mail to our shareholders would have to go to the state. That concludes my testimony. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Well, any questions sometimes?
I don't see that would be a violence.
Mr. Chairman, I thought before we might make an amendment, we'd listen to Mr. Brake from maybe all the rest of those to testify. Yes, sir.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think that if it's left as it is, we have some really substantial problems, because that means any business proposal that comes before us, agreements with oil companies, things that are generally private to business corporations, would be sent to the state and would become public records. And I don't believe that was the SEC does not require that. The intent of this legislation originally was to provide our shareholders the same kind of protection they would have had if we had had to report to the SEC. So I don't know why the phrase got put in there, but we feel that it really goes way beyond what the original intent of the legislation did.
Very well, John. Thank you very much. Mr. Burke? Uh,
first, Jessica.
Julius Breck, Department of Commerce and Economic Development. Go ahead.
Yeah. Let me just answer this one comment that was just raised, or the question that was raised on the 10 shareholders. That language has, is from the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, federal legislation or federal law. And it's supposed to apply in the context of proxy statements, annual reports, and censor authorizations. These are rather substantial matters. They're matters where, for instance, a corporation may be trying to solicit votes at a shareholders meeting to in favor of a certain course of action. And so it wasn't the intent, and I don't believe that the present language of the bill covers all business transactions from the corporation, unless they were in the context of trying to solicit votes of the shareholders. And you might further add that if you were to delete the language of at least 10 last resident shareholders, then I think that the technical argument could be raised that if one shareholder or just a few shareholders were not sent the information in soliciting their votes, then technically the corporation would not have to comply with 139, that is, with this particular section.
Mr. Chairman, run that one by again.
That is, if you deleted the language to at least 10 resident shareholders, if you just made it and published or made available to shareholders.
The shareholders.
At least there's the argument, at least, that if you don't make it available to all of them, then you don't have to comply with this section.
And they can't interpret the fact that you say the shareholders being all those shareholders.
I'm saying to you that it would be the argument that that's what it means, and therefore, if you did not send it to all shareholders, you would not have to comply with this particular section.
More specific, it would be the 10 then.
And I believe that the present SEC law is that if you send out a solicitation to at least 10 shareholders, then that information has to be filed with the SEC. Let me say this also. Our intention was to try to track with the SEC law as far as the technicalities of this particular bill as much as possible, so that we could rely on the judicial gloss, that is, the case precedent in the interpreting the federal law. And I may be mistaken on that, but that was that was how we came up with the 10 last resident shareholders.
Julius, could you maybe double check on that?
Certainly.
That will edit date before we pass this thing out. We may pass it out, but we'll still make a change. Do you have anything?
Mr. Chairman?
One question
of Brett Bowie having here, with respect to the native corporations, what is the possibility of any native corporation selling out or being taken over by another corporation? Is that prohibited for a certain period, or what's the status?
Well, under the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, or that is under the amendment to the Act, the Securities and Exchange Commission prohibited from regulating stock options of the native corporations for a period of 20 years until 1991. It's my understanding that the native corporations may not completely divest themselves of their interests for that period of time, and so therefore the reason was that there's no need for the SEC to regulate in the area. However, they can, the proper term.
I think it'll pick up from your chair over there.
Oh, I want to comment on the bill, too.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, in answer to your question,
Mr. Barry Jackson,
the stock itself, made of corporations, effectively cannot be transferred except upon death or in a divorce, child support situation in court. until 1991. Legally, there is nothing to prevent a corporation from selling assets. And legally, they could sell off all of the assets. In fact, that won't happen. And I don't think there's any danger that it would happen. That's the technical answer to that.
I'm not sure, but isn't there some requirement that for 20 years they can't?
Individuals cannot sell their stock.
I know that.
Corporations only assets, just like any other business corporation. Just as Alaska Airlines could agree to sell its routes and its aircraft to another airline, they made a corporation could do the same thing.
They could be bought out by another corporation.
No, they couldn't be bought out. They would have to agree to sell it. In other words, you can't make a proxy solicitation to the shareholders. You can't make a proxy solicitation. As to this bill, I want to comment. Recognize, I agree with the basic concept of the bill. I'm not sure that the problem raised as to sending materials out to boards of directors is really what this is addressed to. And as I read it, I don't see that it creates that problem because it's limited to proxy statements or other materials relating to proxy solicitations distributed. Now, it does have this problem. A draft proxy solicitation material that is sent out to directors for their review prior to a board meeting would have to be, as I see it, turned over to the state. And that's still internal. It hasn't gone out. And I think there should be an exemption for materials that are submitted essentially just to the board of directors. Another way of it, in addition to that, it might be simple to handle it by increasing the number of 10 to some higher number. I want to mention one other problem, which may not be so clear. Remember that these corporations function internally very similar to a city, let's say, where you have voters, one man, one vote. So you have people going around soliciting proxies. You have board members soliciting proxies from their village. And what they will commonly do is take the official proxy material and cross off if the management's proxy committee and insert their own name and a copy and then Xerox a block of them and go out. Now, you're saying that that board member, when he does that, or anybody else, has got to submit that proxy to the state. That may be a good idea. I don't think it's really needed. Now, if somebody is going out to get proxies, is distributing other materials other than the proxy itself, then fine, I can see having that submitted. But I don't see that we need to have each one of these, well, in each village, somebody's going out soliciting proxies, all kinds of forms, and I don't really see the need for that type of material to be submitted to the state. If it's an organized proxy effort with other materials besides proxy forms themselves, yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Barry. Senator Ray, you still have a question.
That was what that was a question that I had in mind on the proxy deal there.
Mr. Brecht, you had a question.
Again, I'd say that if you did not include the actual proxy statements, you're leaving a rather big hole, and it's possible that some hard sell on a certain course of action could be made in the proxy statement and not in some accompanying document. This language tracks with the SEC language. It's not something that we brainstormed ourselves. We certainly, as a result of a meeting with representatives from the 12 regional corporations last summer, we had a earlier version of this bill, and in that version it was not quite as succinct. And as a result of that meeting, in which a number of attorneys representing the corporations attended, we did come up with a more succinct statement of the bill. So I would argue that the language here is necessary to make it clear just exactly what is necessary to be submitted. Also, I'd like to point out there is an example in my testimony before the House Commerce Committee, that's in your folders, of an example that would show you what the present state of the law is and why we feel that a bill of this nature would be necessary. And for example, if a corporation were to, a native corporation were to consider purchasing a rather substantial business, large building of some sort. Presently, that transaction would not be regulated by the state or by the SEC. If it were not for the prohibition of SEC regulation, that sort of transaction would be regulated by the SEC. It would be rather, could be rather heavily regulated through the Investment Company Act of 1940. What we're proposing here is in no way an Investment Company Act. It's not even a registration act. It's merely the filing of materials with the department. And the same sort of filing is required with the SEC, and the information that's filed is, it's my understanding, it's a matter of public record also. So we're not in any way treating corporations subject to this particular Section 139 any differently than other corporations that are subject to SEC regulation.
Does anybody else want to talk on this? It's all done.
Good. I'd make a recommendation then,
Mr. Chairman.
That's right.
Move the bill out with individual recommendations.
Any objection? Thank you very much, Mr. Bright.
I got an idea here for you, Fred. They got a committee substitute.
Sounds ready.
Okay. Yeah, a committee substitute that I'll put in.
Okay, let's put before us House Bill 371 there, if everybody will. Incidentally, if anybody's wondered what these bills laying on top of the folders are, we won't discuss them now, but if you take them with you and look them over, we'll consider whether we want to introduce these or not. At a later date. Sure, Fred.
Hey, Mr. Chairman. I'm the prime sponsor on House Bill 371, although I have a couple of things to say about that. I ended up being the prime sponsor because the matter was brought to the Commerce Committee by persons from Fairbanks, including one who is here now, Mr. Jackson. And Mr. McKinnon approached me and suggested that I sponsor the bill because it had originated from, the questions had originated from my district. One of the problems is as other persons here, Mr. Jackson and Mr. Block, and the Director of Insurance can address in more detail than I will, that the existence or non-existence of a voluntary safety inspection program in areas that are not covered actively by building codes and fire codes and so forth, at present, it's questionable as to whether or not this can be taken into account in the determination of rates for fire insurance. Now, it may be that if you carefully read through the insurance laws, you could argue, well, the director of the Division of Insurance has the discretion to take it into account, but I believe even the director will indicate to you that he feels that it's better to do it through a bill of this sort so that the problem is specifically addressed and hypothetically presented to him last night, so that he's running by a garbage truck tomorrow that
inspections are not scheduled properly, it can hold up a builder and increase its costs. We are very concerned on that. We do have a small home contractor on the board of directors who is also part of our technical committee, which is developing standards. That's Matt Carlton. If you've got your articles of incorporation on page 5 is the list of the initial directors. Frank Geiger is a realtor. I'm a lawyer and a public member. George Wise is from the Plumbers Union. Ken Murray is from the insurance agents. Mac Charlton is a small home contractor. Julius Kornfind is from the National Electrical Contractors Association. Joe King is for the Interior Fire Chiefs Association. Brent LaValle is for the bankers. Roger Anderson is for IBEW. And George Soli is a code expert who is teaching a course at the university, which is currently going on to get us a crew of inspectors. There are, I think, something like 30 people enrolled in the course at the present time. Not of all of these will be inspectors. Some of them are, of course, of people who are interested in building their own home and want some training.
Mr. Chairman, can we ask questions as we go along, or would you rather?
Yes, if it's all right with those tests, all right, that's all right, some time.
We hope that with the passage of this bill, the director will provide for a reduction in insurance rates on homes that are inspected under the program. We believe that we can show that it will be cost-effective and a reasonable program. It is important to us that we not apply the building codes in the city as they have it in the city without any recognition of the problems that people want to build their own cabins, for example. We do want to have a reasonable degree of fire safety. The program is intended to be primarily fire safety, but also other aspects of safety in the north. We think that if this program is adopted and works in Fairbanks, that it can be extended to other areas of the state where there is substantial population and no building code. The one change in the bill I would like to have is I would like to have an immediate effective date put on it. We would hope our target date is to have our program ready to start inspections on June 1. And we would like to have then, or as soon thereafter as possible, some indication from the Director of Insurance as to what sort of rate reduction we can expect. Fire insurance rates at the present time are extremely high in Fairbanks. Our fire losses are 11 times the national average. Our death losses are 2.5 times the national average. We think that this program could be a substantial help in a reduction of that. Are there any questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
Barry, you mentioned the one particular home that apparently kicked this whole thing off. Wasn't that inspected by the borough before the construction?
No, it was not, sir.
How?
The borough has no inspection program. The borough does have what is called a building permit, but in fact, it does several things. First of all, it lets the tax assessor know that you're building. Secondly, you have a tax exemption under sales tax for building materials, and this is how you get it. Beyond that, it does not apply any codes.
What about the
central rate?
Doesn't the fire marshal do this?
The fire marshal does not have either the time and, in a large way, in a very real way, not enough jurisdiction.
Yeah, is there any place in the state? I don't know. You mean Fairbanks is unique?
For individual homes?
Yeah.
Well, why not?
We have someone here from them.
You don't have that jurisdiction?
I don't think they have very much.
How about the fire department?
We have no fire department in most areas of the borough.
We have.
Now we are.
That isn't our fault.
Fire marshal to testify.
We are developing a fire program in the borough, but that doesn't deal with the initial construction problem or the maintenance problem.
Yeah, but you have a problem in Fairbanks that is not shared in other parts of the state.
Oh, I think it is shared in other parts of the state.
Well, it isn't shared in Southeast, okay?
Anchorage borough has to.
I thought the inspectors, apparently they would come out of the TVCC up there.
The inspectors are being trained by the Tenino Valley Community College. However, it will be employed by private companies that we will approve. Essentially, these are insurance adjustment companies by and large, although there's another We will also be, I think, certified under the program, and his inspection force will be certified.
But will they have any sort of certificate that really means anything when they come out of this course?
They will have a certificate, but more than that, they then have to meet certain other qualifications, and then they have to come before our council or a qualifications committee for oral examination and making sure that they know enough and how this program is to work. One thing we are quite concerned about is the inspectors help people. We will also be turning out a document which will be guidelines for people who want to build their own homes, for example, telling them what standards they are expected to comply with.
They have it.
This would be totally voluntary, though, on the part of the homeowner.
Right.
Is that correct?
Yes.
I noticed in the testimony from the public hearing that one guy said the inspections are priced too high. And my comment on that, and he goes on to say the scopes and the tenders cover too much. My concern would be that not enough people took advantage of this. How is the inspector going to make a living? Is this just a moonlight thing for the inspector?
The reason that we can go into it this way, I believe, is because the firms will be actually employing the inspectors who are going to have other work for them. So it's not going to be a problem getting this underway. As to the cost of the inspections and these comments, we are looking into that. It is set up for about $200 for the average house. There is a schedule near the end of that packet. We've also considered having two inspections, how should I say, one, a full inspection, and two, what might be called a very limited inspection. If people only want to pay for a limited inspection to cover the absolute essentials, then they can have that as a choice.
But then going back again to the thing I ran across here somewhere, somebody said, how do you know that it's going to open? Reduce fire insurance rates. Can you be certain that there's going to be a reduction in fire insurance?
That is the purpose of this bill.
Look over that.
That was my question.
That's what I'd like to hear.
I will have the director of insurance comment.
I'm well aware of the problem up in our area because people are turning down houses for insurance. The State Farm is pulling their tentacles back into where they have protection from the city fire department. And there's a real problem with getting insurance for houses in the outlying area. Now, if they don't have that in Southeast, I don't know why they don't, but boy, we sure have it up there.
I have property in Burr, as well as in the Southern Valley there, and I don't probably get the insurance. I think,
I got guys running around beating on my door to sell me insurance. I don't have no problem.
The only question I was going to ask is what is the range of typical insurance rates for people in and out of the city?
I can't answer that.
Maybe Mr. Block can.
I canceled out some insurance. It was costing me, I think, $1,800 a year for $100,000, roughly, of coverage.
Barron? Let us hear from the State Fire Marshal, and then maybe you might have some further questions for someone else. Mr. Henry.
I'm Ron Henry, State Fire Marshal, and we did present a paper, position paper, on the original bill, establishing a neutral position in this, mainly because the interior fire chiefs are in support of the program. I personally am in support of an inspection program, whether it be done by the state officials, the borough officials, the city officials, or the private group. If there are some standards established for the inspectors and some construction standards for the building, I don't really see this in the bill. It may be there, but I don't read in it. I agree with all the gentlemen speaking on the fire loss in the Fairbanks area and the lack of insurance in the outlying areas. As I said, if these two standards are established in the bill, I would support it. Any questions?
Yeah, I have some questions.
Senator Ray.
Okay, the state doesn't have any, at the present time, you don't have the jurisdiction, you don't have the manpower.
Correct.
Which one, or both?
Both. Our jurisdiction.
The only thing, my objection is, I don't see why a bunch of private companies that's got a guy hired selling insurance, and then he's gonna come out and inspect your property, and then he's gonna either pass on it or not pass on it. Or the guy that's working in a bank, he's gonna lend you some money on it, and if you don't fix it up the way the bank wants it, then you don't get the money. See this?
I think, Mr. Ray, that was one of my statements, that you don't have a standard to go by.
I understand. I'd much rather see the state if you're gonna have fire inspections, then you should have a bunch of fire inspectors that are all qualified, and that's all they do, is go around and inspect.
Just take a borough.
I agree with you, but I'd rather see somebody do it than nobody.
Any other questions? Mr. Brown.
Chairman, I'd just like to know, what would you think if there were a section of the bill of either empowering or mandating the director of the Division of Insurance to establish certain minimum standards for these inspection programs? I think that power may be there impliedly already, but would you feel better if it were in there specifically?
Yes, I would feel better.
Why, Mr. Chairman, why should it be the insurance guy? Why should he set down standards for fire inspection? What the hell does he know about it? Well, somebody, not that he isn't a nice guy, I don't mean that way, but I don't think that comes within the purview of your duties, or I don't think you'd care for those duties, would you really? Get the fire marshal, that's his job. Let him write up some regulations.
That would be a good idea, too, Mr. Chairman.
How's that?
I'm good.
Mr. Chairman, I think that brings up a point then and creates some confusion in my mind. What does the state fire marshal do then?
Well, our jurisdiction starts at four places and up.
Goes around and sets fires. What else?
Sets by the job.
So really then, all we're talking about here is just the gap between zero up to four places.
Right.
Bunch of shoddy construction that boomed in Fairbanks, and that's the problem right there. And then now they want taken care of. Well, that's fine. Let them take care of it.
Well, you know,
take care of it through the organized borough.
We didn't have a building code in borough before we united into a municipality in Anchorage until about 2 years ago. And I could still get fire insurance. I just don't see the problem unless things have changed.
Well, we have a volunteer fire department, and they make inspections anytime you want. You can call them up, and they'll come and do it for free. Exactly what's wrong with the place.
I think the difference between Anchorage and Fairbanks was that the Anchorage borough had volunteer fire departments long before the Fairbanks borough did.
That's it. You don't have volunteer fire departments out there now, Barry?
We have some.
I mean, not enough
to
cover?
The area is not yet covered.
But you have enough that possibly you could set up a program, a public service program to your volunteer fire departments and have them go around and inspect these places that you want inspected.
Well,
sure, they'll know more about it than Mr. Block.
Another question comes to mind with respect to insurance companies. Can the director of the Division of Insurance require that an insurance company provide coverage at a certain rate?
No.
Just because an inspector who is trained through a community college course says that the house is fire safe?
I don't think so. Mr. Block.
Mr. Chairman, may I test right? Because I think the.
Please.
We've lost the orientation of this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Dick Block, Director of the Division of Insurance, and I come to support House Bill number 371, or the committee substitute for House Bill number 371. But in view of the immediate discussion, I think perhaps I should indicate that this is a bill of very, very limited impact. What has been discussed here and proposed by this ad hoc committee from Fairbanks, of which Mr. Jackson is the chairman, is something that currently is not the subject of statute, nor need it be. It is a private, voluntary effort to do that which is not required nor prohibited by the law, for a fee, and there's absolutely nothing that need be done by the legislature to enable it, to permit it, and I certainly don't think it ought to be prohibited. What they lack, however, is the economic incentive on the part of these people who are building these homes to pay the money to get the inspection. So they are reaching around to find what can we do to make it economically attractive to spend $150 or whatever the fee schedule is going to be to have this inspection. And like every other economic incentive quest, it all ends up in the insurance industry somehow, and they've assumed that maybe the insurance rates can be adjusted. And there's a very legitimate reason why perhaps they ought to be a rate differential between the home that is inspected and passes the inspection and the homes that do not. Now, in the Fairbanks area, in the city of Fairbanks, there is a building code. There is a standard already, and no home may be constructed that doesn't meet this standard. In the borough, in the North Star borough, there is no standard, and a person may build a home that is put together in any way that he chooses to do so, because there is no law requiring him to do it a specific way. This doesn't change that. All this says is that there will be an economic incentive in the nature of a differential in insurance rates for that home builder who elects to voluntarily undergo the rigors of this inspection program. And if they do, and build in accordance with whatever standards are set by this voluntary group, then he can take advantage of this insurance differential. Now, some of the statements that were made here indicated, I think, the statement was made that these are going to be made by the insurance company and sort of self-serving. Bear in mind that that Mr. Hackney is right on point. The insurance company doesn't have to write the business at all, nor would they be obligated to after the adoption of this bill. A bank doesn't have to lend money at all, nor would they be obligated to after the adoption of this bill. All this says is that they are providing a service which will provide some objective evidence that your house meets a certain code. It may be that the house next door that does not subscribe to this inspection program also meets the code. He just didn't go pay his $150. And maybe is also entitled to the same differential, except that he has, the person in the first house has some outside manifestation, a piece of paper, that he did comply with whatever standards there are. Now, the fact of the matter is that this amendment amends the insurance code. It amends only that section of the insurance code that directs the director in approving or disapproving rates to apply certain standards. And the one additional standard that they are imposing upon the division is that we require that there be a measurable difference in rate between those houses that are in the borough, which are inspected and pass inspections, and those that are not inspected. In general insurance rate theory, it is appropriate that that type of differential be recognized if the program, if the inspection program, meets the qualifications. And the statute has a qualification in it. It says that where there is an established program to inspect new and existing dwellings, and the program has been certified by the director as likely to reduce the incidence of fires. Now, it's very vague, I suppose, because we don't know what are those criteria that reduce the incidence of fire, but I submit that it's probably not appropriate to put those in statute because they may change from time to time. But whatever that program is, whatever the qualifications of the inspectors are, whatever the standards that they're going to require the houses to meet in order to get the certificate, we will evaluate that. And we will tell the insurance companies, not this is your rate, but if this is your rate for houses in the borough, we want a differential, a favorable credit for the ones that have passed the inspection, because we believe you will be presented with a better caliber of risk if you write those houses. So that is all this bill does, and it is appropriate. This is only one of many standards that we apply in the division for imposing rate differentials, and it's appropriate that we do it here. Now, how much will that differential be? Mr. Jackson has submitted already to the division his plan to be certified by the division. Or at least he sent it to me. I presume it's to be certified by the division.
Yes, sir.
It didn't so state. But we only received it the other day. We have not had an opportunity to look into it intensively, so I can't say what that differential would be. Let me suggest that history, or I should say future, as we accumulate statistics, we will be able to tell with some degree of actuarial nicety that houses that over the last X number of years have met the inspection program, have a better experience than those that do not, and from that come up with some sort of rate differential based on actuarial experience. But we won't be able to do that for several years. So in the meantime, we will probably have to set some arbitrary differential. And I suppose that since we will not have some actuarial information, the differential will probably be set somewhere in the neighborhood of an amount of money which would maybe equate in a period of 2 or 3 years to the cost of the inspection program. So in other words, we say you get your money back in 2 or 3 years if you do it. And then if the experience suggests that there should be a greater differential or a continuing differential, then you'll realize a benefit in future years.
Senator Bowen.
Mr. Chairman, I've lived both inside the city and outside the city. And it was my understanding that when you live outside the city where there is no building code, say the man in the middle house has been inspected and the one on each side of him hasn't been, that you're still shot down because you're next to the possibly hazardous.
I believe, Senator Poland, that factor is already reflected in the rates. Bear in mind, we are not setting a rate. What we are doing is saying they are entitled to a credit of a modest amount from whatever rate is already set for the borough. Remember that the borough rates are already considerably higher than the city rates. And so what we're saying is there should be a credit against that in some amount.
Dick, do you need time to look over this plan before we should make any decisions?
No, sir, I do not. I believe that the legislation I don't believe there should be any changes in the legislation. I believe it adequately puts into statute an adequate reflection of the legislature's mandate that there be a differential. Now, how much that is and what programs will be certified will remain to be seen, and I think it should remain to be seen. I don't really see that any changes need to be made in the legislation. I obviously am going to need some time between now and the adoption of the bill, you know, the effective date of the bill, to review the program. But I do know that this particular program has been thought out for pretty much over a year, I believe, that they've been working on it. I have been in communication with Mr. Murray, who is the insurance representative on this committee, so I am very familiar with what they're doing. I've only recently received their document, however.
Mr. Chairman?
I know Mr. Brown probably has to leave for a session. Our bell hasn't rung yet. If I may interrupt you a minute. Yes?
I'm just going to comment that Mr. Block's comments, if I could get some input from him. The only changes that I might suggest is the immediate effective date that Mr. Jackson addressed, and it might be that you could have a 1 or 2 line committee report pointing out that a program certified by the director and the words set out in the bill would probably anticipate liaison between the director of the Division of Insurance and the state fire marshal. Those are the only changes.
Well, I'd like to point something out. I think if this inspection program were something that would result in state action, like you can't build your house or something, then I believe there should be standards set that the fire marshal would be able to attest that these people are at least as equally qualified as state inspectors. But the result of this is not to determine whether or not he is legally entitled to do anything or prohibited from anything. It's only to determine whether or not it's likely to reduce the incidence of fires. There may very well be, I don't pretend to know all the things that create fires or would prohibit fires, and so input from the fire marshal, I think, would be valuable. But in view of the fact that this relates exclusively to the question of insurance rates, I would think it would be inappropriate to require that liaison in this particular setting.
Mr. Chairman, that was one of the reasons why I was suggesting that it could be put in a committee report rather than in the bill. The committee anticipated that liaison between the director of the Division of Insurance and the state fire marshal in determining ways, methods, or standards under which something would be certified.
That's completely acceptable.
Yeah, and in the way of a letter of intent, not in the bill?
Yeah, a letter of intent regarding the participation by the state fire marshal with the director of the Division of Insurance in that regard. And then I would urge the immediate effective date. I don't
Any objection to that?
There's no objection in principle. I think it's just going to take a period of time to implement, to get new rate filings and so forth. As long as that's recognized, why it should be effective is just as soon as you can do it.
Well, let me interject here. Time's getting pretty short. In fact, I'm surprised the bell hasn't rung. And I apologize. Didn't know it would be this big of a bugaboo, take so much time to the legal bank people are on the other bill that we were hoping to take up. It seems to be a bad day. So we took this up and gave it priority because of the urgency of it, as it was stressed by Mr. Brown. And I realize that you need 1 June to get going. You need an immediate effective date. We've got some material here to solve that Mr. Jackson passed out. But if we wanted to make a motion, I think Katie's heard enough of it.
I think I would rather wait
until we have a quorum.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'd like to knock it around a little more, too, after I read this additional material.
Yeah,
we will expedite it as much as possible. I'll take it up at the next meeting. Barry, I hope it's not necessary for anybody to come back since we've got a lot of material here.
I'll keep Mr. Hackney advised as to my whereabouts so that I can answer questions immediately, even during the meeting.
My phone. Okay. Good. I'm glad to hear your testimony, man. I got the impression maybe down at this end there was a little resistance. Maybe after we discuss it, knock it around, we can overcome that. So, unless someone else has something to say, I guess we better get ready to go and send a chance. Thank you very much. My utmost apologies, Bill and Wes.
No problem.
Do
you understand those things
happen sometimes? I'm going to schedule 3 bills. I thought we could have. Much on House Bill 371, but we covered it pretty adequately. And
House Bill 371?
Right. Dick Locke, Director of Insurance, Commerce Department, he's all for it. What it does is it changes the statutes to where it can't hurt anybody, but if somebody wants to self-help themselves like they do in Fairbanks, as briefly as I can make it, it allows them to do so. And since we had so much testimony on that and give it so much time, I'd like to get a few more bills out.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think the thing that sold me on the bill, and I was a little suspicious of it when it first came in here, because I get suspicious of it here after a while. But it was the testimony Mr. Block gave that indicated that as an insurance guy, he was all for it. He thought it would indeed reduce the rates. It's a voluntary thing. People don't have to do it. So I move that we move the bill out with individual recommendations.
I object.
Since Ray, you and I don't have that problem.
I object only.
And I don't know why they do. We object anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can, when Kay comes.
Okay.
I don't believe in hiring people to run around, people in insurance banks and have to run around making fire inspections.
Well, they're going to have a little problem in regard to getting the job done, and that they won't have any legal means behind them to see that it's going to be on a voluntary basis. No. But if they had enough for initiative to go this far, I would think maybe.
Well, I don't object to Mr. Block. I object to the bill or something.
Mm-hmm. They would also have enough initiative to continue. If not, what harm's done? Hasn't have hurt Juneau or Anchorage, but we don't have a problem. So, we'll wait.
I have no problem.
I think people in Fairbanks want it. They want it to help them
Well, the only thing that I would say and ask you back, Mr. Chairman, is that the people in Fairbanks should operate the same as the people in Anchorage and Juneau. Do something for themselves instead of expecting me to do something for them all the time.
Mr. Chairman, I cannot refrain from commenting on this heresy. People in interior Alaska are indeed the most self-reliant of
they sure are.
The entire state.
They're all self and reliant on the state.
All right. Senate 4, okay? Mm-hmm. We were discussing House Bill 371, fire insurance.
Oh, yeah. I don't like that bill.
You don't like the bill?
No,
I don't either.
Well, I guess that's just pretty well takes care of. Shall we move on to Senate Bill 268?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I withdraw my motion.
Thank you. All of a sudden.
Mr. Chairman, would it be inappropriate for me to inquire of the those two senators who find the bill objectionable what the reason of their objection is? My reason for asking is the bill is of extremely limited scope, and I was wondering whether perhaps because of some testimony that may have been given at the last meeting of this committee, its thrust was misunderstood.
As far as I'm concerned, the testimony better convince me to go along with it. Because from what I got here in writing from the department before you testified, you know, said they had no opposition, they don't change the 2000 statute and so on. And it didn't say much, but you weren't opposed. But from your testimony and that of many others, I was pretty well convinced. Reading the bill itself just wasn't enough to convince me. Since we don't have the people to carry it today, because somebody feels that they might change their mind after asking a few questions and getting the right answers, we'll have to wait till later, and possibly the individual who's absent today and out of town, maybe he might be of some help.
We still got plenty of time, Mr. Chairman. That is a House bill, and
very well.
It isn't any.
Okay, so
like I say, I have no objection to you. It's just I don't approve of private industry and people working in insurance companies and banks and whatever, running around making fire inspections. I don't think that's a job.
Well, if I might say, I don't think that's what this provides for. This simply says that if a homeowner engages in, you know, does those things that qualify him for a certificate, then he's entitled to a preferential rate treatment. That's all this is, and as I've indicated to the sponsors of the bill, it's something that, frankly, within the scope of the authority of the division, we could do anyway. We felt that this program that they've adopted does create a difference in hazard. That is, it creates a better class of business. They really are entitled to a lower rate anyway. This simply gives statutory recognition to that. Technically, they don't.
I think, again, one of the problems, and again, this is aimed at the Fairbanks area, let's face it. One of the problems up there is that people have been unable to get insurance, carry it in the outlying areas, and they're canceling insurance in the outlying areas. Reputable carriers like State Farm, Steers,
Allstate,
and the biggies have been canceling people in the outlying areas of Fairbanks. I don't know if this will help entirely or not, but if it'll do anything to help alleviate the situation without hurting anyone else in the state, in which we would be paying for ourselves, the homeowner would, you know, then I can't see the objection.
I have to say, this is not going to make insurance available where it's not available now. The carrier doesn't want to write it. Reducing the rates further isn't going to encourage it to write it anymore. What it will do is simply create a method for encouraging homeowners, home builders, to build a house that's more susceptible to being ripped.
That will reduce the risk. Right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Dick, I wonder if this might be based on the fact that they can't get insurance up there, and we can in Anchorage, and of course the premiums increase constantly, and you know, in other places. Is it supposed, do you suppose, based on statistics, a high percentage of fires in that area than in, say, you know, in Anchorage? If so,
I think it's related to a combination of the percentage of fires, the lesser ability to extinguish a fire, the higher likelihood that any fire will be a larger or a total loss, and the cost of replacement. the substantial cost, increased cost of replacing a dwelling.
Well, I don't hear anybody changing their mind, so. Thank you very much.
I think I've changed my mind about Mr. Block. I'm starting to like the bill, but not him.
Thank you very much, Dave. All right, 268, legal rates of interest, the usual bill. Do we have someone here to testify on that?
Okay.
Mr. Block couldn't make it today. I mean, Brick, could he?
Okay, this is on 269, Mr. Chairman.
That is 268.
Oh, excuse me.
Right. You know what happened to Mr. Quinn?
I have absolutely no idea. Those people were supposed to be here and call me.
Yeah, now they were notified, yes.
Yeah,
I would bet. You don't see Mr. Brock here. West Corner was here, but he said he had no problems with it at all. So let's, in that case, let's take up our Senate Bill 269.
I don't think we're going to vote for that either.
What's that?
I don't think we're going to vote for that either.
What, 269?
No, that one will be just 268. I don't even think Glenn is going to go for that one.
Well, I got an open mind on that one. Is that your feelings, Kay?
Yeah, I don't
like
it.
Okay.
If I buy $5, you might as well just forget it.
I got to go to the bank today anyway. I might make it. Get some money. All right, Senate Bill 269. And Bill, all right, I had this change made and phoned over that to Sally at State Affairs. I'm just talking to Senator Ray right now because he knows what I'm talking about, and I explain it to everybody else later. And we tightened that up as much as was possible to tighten it up. And I believe you asked it that day, weren't you? I had a meeting here, I couldn't be there. But I had to call in this to Sally, but she didn't get it to the members until after it already convened. It was a little bit late, so we put it up at a subsequent meeting.
What what other discharge is there other than the honorable? Isn't there another one that's acceptable?
General
discharge.
General discharge.
What does that mean?
Well, that's a little less than honorable or inefficient or not quite aptitude or maybe even attitude and so on. Other than honorable, but not dishonorable.
It's general under honorable conditions. General discharge under honorable conditions.
Yeah.
No, I thought a general discharge was discipline for the convenience. No, for the convenience either of the individual or for the service.
No, they usually get for the convenience of the service, a riff or something. Unless there's something else other than that. It's not what it says.
I also understood that if a person had a, like in the Navy, if they had anything above a mast, captain's mast, if they had a summary court-martial, then that it was perhaps they would not receive an honorable discharge with a general discharge.
I'll tell you a good example. It's just one I could give you a lot. I had a guy, a grown man, that was a bedwetter. He couldn't help it. Supposedly we sent him to the psychiatrist and everything else, you know, so they gave him a general discharge. He'd done nothing really bad. He just was like kind of man for the service. And things of this sort.
So if you got caught speaking and he got out. Did you discharge the thing going up? Did you discharge the thing? I don't know. And then you got to accept this message.
I got an honorable discharge, but I had a summary court.
Well, Mr.
Let me explain to everybody else. We had somebody. Senator Paul and Senator Hackney, we had somewhat of a dilemma over in State Affairs on this bill, and that I myself couldn't go along with it. I even called Mr. Tinsley, Jack, the director of Veterans Affairs, on it prior to going to that committee meeting, and I called the National Guard people, and they realized, oh, that, you know, it wasn't tight enough. They thought maybe some eight ball, say, well, I hurt my back, and anybody can say he's got a bad back, and it's hard to prove otherwise sometimes, and somebody might, some eight ball might capitalize on the situation and open it to a lot of people that it should not be open to. And so we tightened it up, and what you see,
on line 14, yeah. Do I read that if a guy during his initial enlistment spent 91 days in and injured his toe, so he had to have it lopped off, which might render him ineligible for military service, would have the veterans
is it emphasis on emphasis on the time? Is that
yeah, primarily the time. Is it?
You just have to cut it off somewhere.
My goodness.
Is the word, should you say, what's rendered him ineligible for military service? I want him ineligible for National Guard service.
Well, if he's really physically incapacitated, then I'd go along with it. But holy smokes, that seems to me like this opens the whole thing up here.
Should you have the word military in there, or should you have something else?
National Guard sort of goes by the same standards as the active military.
Well, there's people in the National Guard that could not qualify as military.
There are certain instances where people had gut waivers at this time.
Incidentally, yeah, I think I'm supposed to know you, but...
Dick Roundtree, sir.
Yes, Dick. Mr. Dick Roundtree. Go ahead, Dick. Okay. We talked over the phone, and it's just been a long time.
All right. We do have certain
National Guard.
Instances where people do have waivers on their degree of disability, which can belong to the Guard. There are very few and far between. They get the same physical that you would get if you were inducted into the armed services. But I think they have waivers also in their regular army.
Then you'd have no objection if we put in there, change military to something else.
Would you?
Well, I got a problem here. I don't understand what B and C. Now, B and C, here's C. It says less than 90 days. In other words, you got in and got hurt. And, what's physically disabled?
Physically disabled in the line of duty.
What does physically disabled mean?
Performing his actual duty.
Well, I have a 40% disability right now. So what does that mean?
Well, you're physically disabled, you're 40%. Performing your job?
Yeah, I was injured in the line of duty. Mm-hmm. Blown out of the truck and broke my back.
Okay. Well, you're already eligible.
Out of a truck on board ship?
Yeah. It was a hand truck.
Well, Mr. Chairman, what's the present, how does the present law read? National Guard people are eligible under what circumstances now for vets law?
6 years service.
So this just adds the provisions of B and C.
Right. So this is picking up a few people that that have had a problem. Matter of fact,
About six, I think, you're right.
Right. Senator Huber was conferring with us on this, and we certainly support it. It will benefit the Guard, and it will take care of possibly 5 or 6 people, depending on how far you want to go back on it. We had an instance recently. We had a gentleman in the Guard for he was in about 4.5 years, and all of a sudden he came down with diabetes. He cannot belong to the Guard. With diabetes, so he will not be eligible for any kind of a vet's benefit there.
Yeah,
not in the last
was he disabled in the line of duty? Did he get the diabetes because he was in the Guard, or did he do it because he had an infirmity of the cell structure or body? I don't see where this would go.
Well, it's possibly hereditary. Now, the only
thing
that actually in line of duty is it within the first 90 days. That's why that's in there, and this was copied after the federal regulation on it. That's where we got the wording on that.
I don't have any objection. I move it out of the individual information.
Oh, well, Senator Ray, any objection?
No, I don't know. What do you want?
I'll grow no wreck on Bill.
I'll be no wreck.
Well, that's
what
I
want
to be, is no wreck. I guess old Brad will have to be the only do pass again and fight it on the floor. Well, we'll vote it up and vote it down.
Well, that doesn't mean that we're opposed to it, but if we could slip out from underneath it, now it gives us leeway that we can go in and make modifications when it right. comes up. Just like today, we had one that we were allowed to amend the floor because some of us had no rep on it.
So what? Thank you, Senator Ray.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I really don't see, you know, I'd just as soon open a bill like this up to ladies who had served in the trenches in Boy Scouts.
You know, I don't feel too strongly about it either.
Now, there's some of them
I hate to take it to the floor because I don't know how good I could defend this one. That one today, I had a lot of ammunition on Senator Ray. But you were kind to me.
That made it acceptable, and I don't think
that's right. I think that was a very good amendment, if I may compliment you.
I think that'd be accepted. I've been thinking about that because
what happened then?
You got lipped in it too. That's an open.
Say something.
Hello.
That's
Casting.
That's a big help.
No.
So see, it's a good way to break yourself into it.
Yeah. By the way, I received a good live.
Late. We won't pass out anything today anyway. I want to sort of build out the opposition to this.
Kate was out in the hall. She said she had one phone
was
call.
Was Kate already in?
She had one phone call to make and said she'd be in here.
I'll check.
Right.
Bill is usually late, but he always gets here. 9 o'clock committee meetings are a bad time, but when they went around the table, what an introduction on that, Bill, Dick, and
Kellis.
Sue.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Better know you, Ellis.
Kellis. Key.
Oh, Kellis.
Yeah, that's kind of unusual.
I got an unusual first name, too. That's why they call me Brad. Short for Bradley Ellis. You know, for this state to become of age, it has to have some advantage over the lower 48, unconstitutional or not. Now, talk to the Department of Law. They said, well, hell, we got many laws that are unconstitutional until the Supreme Court proves otherwise. You can put you in jail for violating them. But we're an exception. When they drew up our Constitution many years ago, they didn't know we were going to have another country 1,000 miles up north. And I agree there shouldn't be any unfair competition or any preference shown between, say, California and Arizona or Oregon State or something of that sort, possibly. But up here, you've got now workman's comp's highest in the country, and high wages and transportation costs and a little of everything. So if we don't give our state some advantage, constitutional or otherwise, we'll never become of age. Here's an example. I discussed this with the Chamber of Commerce in Anchorage this summer. I bought several books on free enterprise, and that's sort of my hang-up this year. But I think we've gone so far the other way, somebody's got to bring us back. So I'm really willing to take the risk, even if I'm standing alone. But my buddy here stands with me most of the time. A few other good solid citizens that aren't balked by anybody. And so I talked to individual businessmen when I was getting my brochures printed for the campaign. I talked to Ken Ray, which we have a letter in the file here on, from, and he said on the election campaign pamphlet, which was quite a nice little chunk of money, if if we could have deposited it in Alaska. But he said, you know, I could have done that. I could have only added just a few employees, which would have spent the money in Alaska, and they would pay revenue on their wages. It would all come back, all be spent right here at home. And he said, I could have just beefed up my equipment just a little bit, put about $500,000 worth of extra equipment in. But he says, you know, $500,000 is a lot of money. He said, some say maybe we should have, rather than the 5% advantage that we now have in bids, maybe a 10 or 15. He said, well, that wouldn't have made any difference. I could have gone bankrupt, you know, by putting in $500,000 worth of equipment and expanding my employees by four. But I could have kept most of those employees because I could do a lot of other things that people send out to be done after this job. And he said, if the state would give me advantage, no other business is going to give me the advantage. But since the state is supposed to help us in our harasses, they could have, you know, given me this advantage. And he said, it would take about 20 or 25% for a few years. Then if they want to reduce it, after many of our companies that, you know, produce things that the state government needs and other industries, our businesses in the state, then they can reduce it. After we get equipped, but initially we got to, you know, they got to get our, you got to crawl before you walk. So I talked to him, I talked to three different office supply concerns that provide stuff for federal and state agencies, and I talked to even George Sullivan and Doug, our wife of the mayor and city manager of Anchorage, even Dick, city attorney. Talked to a little everybody. Being semi-retired, I can sort of make a little time. I can sell real estate today or tomorrow. You know, the more I sell, the more money I make. But when you've got your two kids through college and on your own, it's just you and mom, and you're both working. If you really feel strongly about something that that was good for the state and for your fellow man, you can take out the time to do it. That's why I voted for all the retirements. The 20-year and the 25-year state employees, even. Some of my more conservative members didn't like that, but they considered me overall, and they're still back. So with that introduction, that's the reason I put this in. There's so many businessmen figure that if we can be given advantage for a few years even, the 5% might even work. We would prefer a 10% later on. But we need a 25, not less than a 20% for a few years, you know, to get our feet on the ground. And it sounds logical to me. And whether it's constitutional or not, well, you know, you got to consider it, weigh everything, and think what's good for the state. It's going to be better for us. Our prices, I think, in the long run for a consumer will be lower. We'll be more independent of the lower 48, and so many other things. That's the reason I put this bill in. Bill, yeah, that's good.
Right, we're doing a session on goal setting within the Department of Administration. And what we do is, in the afternoon from 1:30 until 5 o'clock, we have individual division directors meet in the governor's conference room, and we have people from various departments within state government, plus three or four people from the private sector come in and help us set our goals, make sure that our goals are compatible with what they feel that we should be doing.
May I interrupt you just a minute, Bill? You know, I read in your comments about an advisory board, you know, this paperwork reduction bill that Chance had put in. Well, Chance and I are good friends. Just because we have opposite parties makes no difference. I used to be a Democrat, too. Who knows, someday I may be another one, but not too likely. But
Libertarian.
I gave him that bill, and that he is a good friend, and he's trying to be conservative because he's trying to run for governor. And he's been liberal as hell. And I appreciate the fact that people don't think it like. I don't hate them for it. But he said, Brent, I like that bill. I'd like to have that. Well, he's done me a lot of favors, so I like it too. And so I gave him that one. And he also is familiar with these bills and supports them. He knows there's, you know, maybe a little
unconstitutionality there, you know, yay or nay. But he thinks like I think. And even though some of the attorneys upstairs say, well, you know, yes, I agree with you, we need to do it. But, you know, it may or may not be constitutional. Well, you have to make a decision. And I think the right decision is just the one that I'm trying to make. And he agrees, too. He said, I'll back you 100%. He's done a little digging into it for me. He's an attorney as well. That bill was discussed before the Chamber of Commerce, along with these two bills. And, of course, they approved them 1,000%, because they don't look at it from what's good for Alaska, you know, the Chamber of Commerce thinks that business-wise. And I think we have to think that way, too. But advisory committees, you know, we've got so many. Now, last year, I think the governor said in one of his meetings that every year we increase, I don't know, I think it's 11 or 12, commissions, boards, councils, and committees. Where we're going to stop. And everybody's sort of down on that. What I thought it would do, and I've got it written here on, in the margin, another bill, maybe slip that in later, because I agree with you. You need to have that. But if I slipped it in this bill, it might just shoot it down. So I think that's what you were probably getting at, were you not?
Well, my point was that represented from the private sector was two people from the supply houses. Mm-hmm. Okay, and we discussed this bill briefly. It came up as a matter of conversation. They were against it. Mm-hmm. Simply because, you know, not from a business standpoint, but as a taxpayer, as a business standpoint, they loved it. You know. What they would do, Brad, that I fear, is they take a look at the bid. They know they have 25% to work with, plus their margin of profit. They would, you know, come within their normal margin lines, and then tack another 20 or 25% on the bid price. And the ultimate effect is it's a severe cost to the taxpayers. State government is paying, you know, they could pay from 10 to 25% more for their commodities through this process. That's my fear. You and I agree that we want to keep as much of the dollars in our economy as possible, mm-hmm. and not have it go to Washington. You know, adversely, we want to attract funds from outside.
Right.
Because I don't know of too many businesses in the state of Alaska that are adequately capitalized. And the more that we can help them, better off the entire state will be.
And it never will be unless we give them a little advantage for a few years.
We need to give them advantage, but not at the cost of the total taxpaying population. I don't know, you know, I don't know how we can do that.
May I interrupt a minute? Incidentally, Senator Poland just joined us. How is this going to increase? I didn't quite follow you there.
On a bid proposal, if Alaska vendors have a 25% advantage, if you will, then they're going to use that in their profit margin. Instead of having, say, an 8% profit margin, that could increase from anywhere from 10 to 25% because they have this advantage. And the ultimate effect is the cost on the taxpayers.
This is Senate Bill 266.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm looking at it.
You think the reason is because 25% is too high, 5% is too low, they all tell me.
I think 5% is too low, and I think 25% is
too high.
It's too high. I would like to see possibly 10.
Well, you know, I've got some letters here. One recommends 10, I think. I don't know who you might have contacted. This is Greatest World Covering, Northern Video Systems Incorporated, Aspen Supply Incorporated. This one is Alaska Marine and
Equipment Incorporated, Kenray's Print Shop, IBM, and so on. Are all in favor? There was one that Lucas Motor Company wanted, and also Brady's wanted to better define manufactured and warehousing. And I think
that's something we're concerned about too.
You had that comment too. So I think we need to go up to the legal section of legislative affairs and knock this around after I sort of get it in my head first and see if we can make that more specific and tie it down. This comment was made too. If it was 25%, that would it would encourage a lot of low 48 companies. This was in a Chamber of Commerce meeting. Some of those that think we make these comments weren't too well established. Most of the business was outside. I couldn't differentiate who was what when all the conference was going on. Some of them I knew, but others I didn't know what business they were in. I knew them, but that's about all. So, one that wasn't from outside said, well, I think this might encourage a lot of low 48 people to come up here and set up a little establishment, you know, 25%. That would make it profitable for them. That's the reason that he preferred 10 or 15. Well, then Ken Ray and a few others that I don't know their names, but I remember Ken because he was when I talked with quite a bit, are the print shop, said, well, you know, as I've already explained, you know, I need for a few years because my equipment is very expensive. But once I get set up, I can do it for many years to come. But $500,000 worth of equipment and adding a few employees with a high cost of living, and he says, now workman's comp is the highest in the United States, and I've got to have enough advantage to get on my feet, then they can lower it.
What would happen?
I figure this 25% probably would be reduced.
You know, if I can visualize a small office supply store or a large office supply store in the Seattle area saying, you know, things aren't too great in the lower 48 economy. We're getting a little hungry. Alaska is growing. Its economic base is increasing substantially. We're going to move a little office in there. And that little office might consist of one man and a catalog. Applies for Alaska business tax, you know, he's established. So, you know, the competitive bidding process would involve him, give him that distinct advantage when he has nothing invested. I think our concern, our mutual concern, is with a businessman in this state, business person in this state that has an investment. You know, they bring their livelihood from their business and they support, you know, several families, and their investment keeps compounding within the state of Alaska. Not some carpetbagger from Seattle or San Francisco that sends a man in here with a catalog and in fact can offer the state of Alaska the best price. But what are we doing as far as our business people, the protected folks that are involved here?
I think a great many of the businesses that are now pretty big in the state started out in that very catalog category, and I don't see anything wrong with that at all. If it used to just gripe me so bad there in Fairbanks to have W.G. Burke Company at that time were coming up through there, and they were selling direct out of Seattle into the market that I was supplying up there as a stocking dealer, and it just really used to grate me because they cut me up on prices every time I turned around. Well, now W.J. Burke Company has an office in Anchorage, Alaska, and they've joined the competition in the state, and that competition, I think, is what is going to hold this thing in check. And I'm totally in favor of something. I think 25% is too high, but I think we ought to have a realistic differential in there. And heck, let's encourage these people to come up here. If they come up and establish a catalog store, by golly, they put a guy to work that wasn't working before in Alaska.
And require them, if I may interrupt, Glenn, require them to warehouse up
people. You tie that down too, not have it all shipped in a warehouse.
Yeah, I think that could be working.
Sure.
If they, you know, if we could get away from the drop shipment type situation.
That's right.
I had a comment to make about the point you made, but I lost it.
Maybe
I'll pick it up in a minute.
We've been interrupting quite a bit. We're doing this really informal because I think it might be better as we think of questions if it's all right with you, Bill. I knew the 25% was probably a little high, but I can understand why some requested 25%. And they only requested for a few years. But they might still get the job done. Now, I'm sure this applies to just a few businesses in Alaska. All would need a 25% advantage. Maybe a 15 or a 10.
Could I ask a question of Dick Bradley? I know we're very conscientious about our local businessmen, our statewide businessmen. How many bids of commodities are awarded to outside of Alaska firms where those commodities are available in Alaska? High or low or medium percentage?
Well, that's what's so difficult to have to put a handle on, because a lot of times when we're dealing with a local vendor, what he's doing is he's ordering from outside anyway.
Yeah.
And he doesn't necessarily, as far as manufacturing, there's very few commodities in the manufacturing. The
furniture and paint in Anchorage, only two manufacturers.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think we get into some fiberglass items, for example.
Delvo went under, I think, didn't he?
Well, Delvo did, but there's another one. But there's, I think, fiberglass tanking and things like this. And I know that, I think Ace Tank is doing some of their building. I know that they're, that it is an outside firm, but I think they're also doing some tank building.
That's
special
right.
Fabrication.
Well, this is what they did. Chamber of Commerce, maybe they're not a member and they don't know about it or something.
Mm-hmm.
They were the two that were mentioned.
But and this warehousing business is an extremely difficult one to hold a handle on. Like I say, it could be, I think that we're going to have to define what the warehousing or what the intent of the legislation is. Because even though somebody may have some warehousing in the state, it's just highly likely that they're still purchasing.
No, we'd have a lot more doing it if it was 25%. I realize that. No,
I think 15 would be a reasonable and supportable figure.
I think so.
Come down a little bit.
It ain't 10.
12
and
a half.
Yeah, 10 is
25, and most of them thought that our 15 or 10 would be better in the Chamber of Commerce. And I discussed with the Board of Directors at length on it, and not just amount of 20 minutes with the whole chamber back during lunch today, but a few said 25 because, it costs so blasted much for them to, like the election campaign pamphlet. Ken Ray, I was having some brochures printed during the election, and he brought it up, and he later wrote me a letter. And But I'd already had the bill going before he wrote the letter, because I've done a lot of work this summer on it. That's the reason I put the manufacturers and the warehousing in there, because a lot of them do drop ship. You know, they just have a little office and a catalog, and they don't employ many people. And that's not much benefit to a lot of stuff.
My concern in this, if I were a businessman selling to the state of Alaska, you know, there's only so much in this pie. It's only going to be split so many ways. And I feel if we allowed such a difference, you know, such as 25%, that greed would tell me that, gee, my pie is going to be split even more, and my piece from it is going to be less. I think what we're trying to do is help the Alaska businessmen, which I wholeheartedly support. But if we introduce the legislation to the detriment, you know, we haven't done our job.
There could be an adverse effect on, we'll say, outside vendors competing for state business. We do need a certain amount of competition that keeps everybody on. And it could be that if the preference were too high, these people would just discontinue bidding. And there are certain commodities that maybe would have very limited as far as vendors are concerned. And it just could be that these people say, well, you know, hell with it. What's the use of bidding if we're not allowed that, you know, that kind of margin? And I think, too, when you get into manufacturing, you've got some other issues that may need to be discussed. As I know that in-state manufacturing, if I'm not mistaken, there are tax incentives that the state can provide. And there's also preferential treatment for Alaska Forest products now. So it is conceivable that you could get into a situation where something were manufactured in-state with Alaska Forest products and the 25% or 10% or 15%. I think if you compound all those, your margin could be much. If we start out at 25%, it could even be more than that, considering the tax incentive as well. Those are some of the issues that I think need addressed.
Well, anyways, I mentioned initially that 25% was probably a little high, and it was only for a select few. Maybe we can't help the select few, and I realize, I'm quite aware of the fact that we have to reduce it some. And I wanted to hear all the adverse testimony on the 25%, because I think it's high myself. You can have more people that benefit than if it's 25%.